My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He is affiliated with the Family Research Council and is the author of the brand new book, Deadly Consequences: How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. The book goes through the debate in many different ways of allowing women to serve on the front lines of combat and why Colonel McGinnis believes this is a politically correct initiative and not one that is better for women or better for the readiness of our armed forces. And, sir, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Greg.
You are not shy, sir, about going after some of the current and recent military leaders for what you believe is their kowtowing to domestic engineering rather than doing what's best for the military. Here's what you say early on in the book. The military must focus on the realities of war and avoid the muck of partisan politics. Yet the service chiefs have endorsed President Obama's latest attempt at social engineering like agreeable bobblehead dolls. You mentioned the same thing was true with the lifting of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And they're doing it the same way here with women in combat. You point out that this is not exactly new, but it seems to be at a heightened state now where, according to your analysis here, that our military leaders are essentially turning into a bunch of yes men. How did that happen?
Well, it happened because that's how they were selected for these senior positions. Pardon me. If you look at the chiefs of the services, none of them have direct ground combat, so they really don't know what we're talking about here. And then when you capitalize on that, you have to understand that there's a radical feminist agenda here, and they never would have been selected by the Obama administration, and they are appointed by the Obama administration, unless they agreed that they would move forward on these particular agendas. So in spite of knowing some of these people personally, the very senior four stars in the Pentagon, I went to school with some of them. They know what the facts are. However, they're cowering with a silence, much like the people on the Hill are cowering because they have a constitutional obligation to stop this, but they're going ahead with it.
Colonel, when you look at the likes of Mike Mullen, who was certainly on board with lifting of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Bob Gates was as well, and from what we can tell, it doesn't seem like they would have been all that upset about entering women into combat as well. They were Bush administration appointees, and you point out that this has kind of been the arc over the last three administrations, so it's not just an Obama administration thing or a Democratic thing, correct?
That's absolutely correct. We have senior leaders that have really, in this case, caved to the radical feminists who, you know, in fact, you know, there are a lot of them in the Pentagon, and certainly the senior leadership, the political leadership, seems to think that this is also a good idea, but you know, none of them really have the type of experience, understand what they're doing, understand the physiological, psychological differences here.
Colonel, there's been a lot of talk, especially on the internet and blogs in recent months, about the number of high-ranking officers who have essentially been dismissed one way or another by this administration. Is it largely because they wouldn't acquiesce to what the agenda is here with the feminist movement?
Well, in some of those that were removed, perhaps because of the social agenda of the Obama administration, they couldn't tolerate it, therefore they did leave. I would say most of them had issues with the Obama administration and the conduct of the war in Iraq and later in Afghanistan and perhaps other issues. So, you know, it's very disturbing how they use a political litmus test to determine whether or not they're going to put people in senior positions, but that's the way it is today.
The big argument here, of course, is that this is for equal rights for women. Women should have the opportunity to do everything that men do, whether it's in the boardroom or on the battlefield here. You have a chapter going through all the different rebuttals that you have to the different arguments for women engaging in combat. That's probably the most common argument that we hear. So why do you believe that's not an effective argument and that shouldn't sway our military leaders or our lawmakers into approving women in combat?
Well, certainly the question of equality is one that is often used by the radical feminists. They say that, you know, women are prohibited from ground combat, and therefore they're doomed to second-class citizenship. And they're willing to accept a reduction in the overall combat effectiveness of the armed forces in order to accommodate this. Now, I oppose that for good reason, because the overwhelming evidence out there on physical, psychological, historical, and other reasons, medical reasons, say that no. When we're talking direct ground combat, I'm talking about smashing heads, shooting at short range, wrestling people in the death struggle to the ground. And I chronicle that with many vignettes throughout the book. You know, the question, really, Greg, that ought to be asked is whether or not we want to be that kind of society that really puts women into ground combat, and are we that society, and what are the consequences for men, women, and children? And we're moving rapidly in that direction, given all the experimentation that the Defense Department is doing at the behest of the Obama administration. I think it's a radical, wrong-headed way of going, and it's going to jeopardize our overall readiness.
What do you see as the feminist endgame here, even if they get exactly what they want in terms of women on the front lines, and perhaps they believe that will mean to more female promotions in terms of officers, but what's their endgame at the end of all this?
Well, they want women to be forced basically into all positions, whether it be direct ground combat, special forces, or infantry. They see there should be no prohibition, even if it means a decrement of readiness. That's where they want to go. Now, the argument has been that too few women are flag officers, general officers, but in fact, women above the rank of captain are promoted, according to the RAND Corporation study of 2012, at the same rate as men. So it really is a non sequitur. It doesn't make any sense. So you have to conclude that the radical feminists believe in an androgynous world where they're interchangeable. And as a direct result of that, you have to then question whether or not this is in the best interest of the country. Are we going to jeopardize readiness? And I argue very conclusively, I believe, in the book, that yes, we are going to jeopardize readiness. We're going to have a far less effective armed forces. And by the way, our enemies aren't this foolish. They aren't going to go in this direction. And we have plenty of evidence to that effect as well.
Let's talk about a little bit of what you're just referring to. You go to great lengths in the book to talk about the different areas where this could be problematic, from simple physical and physiological capabilities of men versus women, the effect potentially on unit cohesion, potential sexual entanglements as a result of men and women serving in such close quarters, and many other issues. I'm sure they all kind of are interconnected and can't necessarily be broken apart, but is there any one of those that is the greatest concern to you as it relates to military readiness?
Well, I am concerned that standards are being jeopardized, and we see that even today with the experiments that the Army and the Marine Corps are conducting, where you see on the media that women are going through the infantry officer course at Quantico. Of course, none have graduated yet because it's so tough, and it rightly should be. But you had a couple that graduated from the enlisted infantry course here recently, and yet what you don't hear is that they had to abide by two different tests that had gender norm standards. In other words, the standards were different. Most people need to understand that what every mom and dad in America understands, and that is that by and large, women are not little men. They are, according to the Army, about 5 inches shorter on average, 32 pounds lighter, 37 pounds less muscle mass. They have about half the upper body strength of the average man and three quarters of his cardiovascular fitness. And if you really want to get down to NASS breast tacks, you find that 20 to 30-year-old women have the same aerobic fitness as a 50-year-old man. Now, do we want to, in a world-class military, put women in the absolute front line where we expect people to be performing at their peak performance and all of a sudden pretend that political correctness is going to win the war? Of course not. And that's why I really see our commanders, demonstrating a cowardness of silence because they know better. The studies are overwhelming. Decades and decades, which I cite in the book, of overwhelming evidence that this does not make sense for anybody that's concerned about this, much less our country.
And you believe if we continue in this direction, we're headed towards women being drafted eventually, correct?
Well, that's one of the logical conclusions, because the only prohibition from women right now serving in the direct ground combat has been a policy which the Obama administration removed this January. And, of course, there's been a Supreme Court decision that dates back to 1981 that basically said that because back then women were prohibited from ground combat, then they, and because the draft is all about raising combatants, then they said, well, it made no sense to make women eligible for selective service. Well, that's been totally thrown out the window. And so women now, in the future, when there will be a case, and there will be one that will contest this, women will have to sign up for the selective service, just like all 18-year-old men. And then when, not if, but when, because of all the economic and world turbulence issues, we return to a draft, a conscription military. Women will be drafted for the infantry and every other position that must be filled. We used to call them cannon fodder. Well, your daughters of America will be cannon fodder, just like your sons, because of some spineless people today making decisions that are not in the best interest of our families, much less our country.
We're talking with retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. The book is Deadly Consequences. Just a couple minutes left here. And Colonel, you mentioned earlier on in our conversation that none of the current Joint Chiefs have actually had ground combat experience in war. When you combine that with the fact that a growing number of members of Congress have never had that experience and a growing percentage of the public has not had that experience, how much does that account for the fact that there hasn't been much resistance in any of these areas to this policy shift?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, Marty Dempsey, the chairman, was an armor officer. He commanded the 1st Armor Division in Baghdad, but he wasn't a ground combatant. Ray Odierno, the chief of staff of the Army, was an artilleryman. He did not engage in direct ground combat, though some of his units did in the 4th Infantry Division. So the same thing with the Navy. The Marine Corps, Amos is an aviator. And members of Congress. I looked at the entire list of members of Congress who have any military experience. The vast majority are reservists that never saw direct ground combat. Only a few might have seen some combat. Like Duncan Hunter was an artilleryman who saw some combat in Fallujah, but he was not a direct ground combatant. So when we look at the Congress today, you find very few people that have any clue, firsthand clue, of what I'm talking about here. Certainly none of the chiefs, and most of the senior officials that are appointed by the Obama administration and the Pentagon haven't a clue either. So they're willing to throw our young daughters into, you know, a very, very tough arena where very few nations would even consider it today, except under great desperation in the survival of the nation, and that is sending their daughters into harm's way. And it's a radical difference between being in theater, like in Afghanistan and Iraq, where I've been, and engaging in direct ground combat. You're taking the fight to the enemy under the most grueling of all circumstances. Our women don't do that.
Last question here, Colonel. Given that preface, then, with Congress not being real experienced with these matters and the Joint Chiefs, at least at the present time, in that same camp, your solution to this problem is for Congress to step up and take back policy decisions from the Pentagon and the civilians there. But with 75% of the public backing this, perhaps because they don't know any better, a majority of Congress clearly not willing to put up much of a fight, and a lot of the military officers who don't agree with this finding their walking papers, where will we find the impetus to make this push to have this either reconsidered or reversed?
Well, only if our American people recognize the insaneness of a decision that will push their own daughters into direct ground combat against their own will. And I think that's where we're going. You know, once you let open Pandora's box, and that's what we've done with this decision. We've gone against history, against psychology and all the physical differences. And we're pushing in a direction that is going to jeopardize the very safety of our nation. You know, I use the illustration, I think it's a good one to end on. It's like a football team. You know, if we go down to the University of Arkansas and we tell them, you have a winning schedule, but this coming game, you're going to have to put three women on the front line. Well, if they put three women on the front line in every play, guess what's going to happen? They're going to lose. And they're going to be the laughing stock of the NCAA. Well, that's what we're being told here. For political reasons, we're being told that we have to have a certain percentage of women in the direct ground combat front lines. And the consequences, they could care less. And it's going to be dramatic. Unfortunately, you don't have the experience on the Hill, and the generals are too cowardly to say what is the obvious. So the American people may end up paying a very high price when we do go to war, and we will go in the war in a serious way in our not-so-distant future.
Colonel, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you, Greg.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He is now with the Family Research Council. His book is Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.